Hello and welcome to The Summer Rise. I'm Roshan Mohammed Saleh. Like their brethren all over the world, Palestinian Muslims are observing the month of Ramadan. They're fasting all day, focusing on the Quran and acts of worship, and breaking their fast in the mosque or with family and friends, like in other countries. But Palestinian Muslims also face unique challenges performing their Ramadan duties under Israeli occupation and discrimination. Those wanting to pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, for example, face travel restrictions by the Zionist authorities. In Gaza, the humanitarian situation is so bad that many will have to rely on aid to get their iftar meals. And those Palestinians living in the 1948 areas suffer systematic discrimination from Israeli authorities. Today, we'll be focusing on what Ramadan is like for Palestinians. Here's Ashraf Shannon with a report from Gaza.
Like all Muslims around the world, Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip are observing the holy fasting month of Ramadan. But unlike most people around the world, people in this tiny coastal sliver have to deal with high unemployment and poverty rates due to the Israeli siege that has entered its ninth year this June. Traditionally, people flock to the markets to buy food items to prepare their iftar meals to break their long hours of fasting. But due to the ailing economy, people in markets struggle to buy food items.
This month of Ramadan has been very harsh for the people here because of the ongoing siege. Business is so bad because most people can't afford to buy special foods to prepare their iftar meals for the holy month. A lot of people here are dependent on food coupons and aid provided by charities just to get by.
To get a closer look into the hardships under siege, we visited the house of the Saifi family. The family of six is very poor, and the breadwinner hasn't worked for over 3 years. His wife was struggling to prepare the iftar meal with very little food items available. At iftar time, the family gathered on the floor of their only bedroom to break their fast, wondering whether they will be able to have food for the next iftar meal.
Since the beginning of Ramadan, we have been receiving some food from people who donate it because they know that we're really poor. This evening we decided to cook a meal at home, but we were only able to afford lentils. I'm unemployed and we're so poor that I can't even afford to buy decent clothes for my family and my children. As you can see around you, we live in a miserable condition.
The Palestinians in Gaza are now observing the month of Ramadan under siege for the ninth consecutive year. But despite their hardships under the inhumane and illegal Israeli siege, Palestinians in Gaza say that nothing will spoil the spirit of the holy month. Ashraf Shannon, The Sun Will Rise, Gaza.
To discuss the situation in Palestine during Ramadan, as well as a recent failed attempt to break the siege of Gaza during the holy month, we have two guests in the studio with us today. Yusuf Al-Hilu is an independent Palestinian journalist. Yusuf is from Gaza originally and has covered numerous conflicts from there, most notably the devastating Israeli bombing of Gaza in 2008-2009. And Richard Sudan is a writer, political activist and performance poet. Richard's writing has been published by The Independent, The Guardian, The Huffington Post and The Washington Spectator, among others. He was set to go to Gaza on the recent Freedom Flotilla from Greece, but his boat didn't leave the port. Guys, welcome to today. Yusuf, I'm going to start with you and talk about Ramadan in Palestine. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know Gaza very well. What's it like there at the moment during Ramadan?
Well, like any other Muslim communities around the world, Palestinians in Gaza, they try to observe this holy month of Ramadan without being affected by the siege, so life goes on. And a sense of security and safety is essential when observing these holy rituals. So people have been badly affected by the employment, by the poverty, but despite this, you know, they try their best to draw a smile on their children's faces by, you know, decorating their houses, by buying special food, by going to the mosque, by visiting each other, by trying to give a sense of safety for the community around them. Mm. And during Ramadan last year, people of Gaza were subjected to brutal Israeli war for 51 days. So the first anniversary is being marked during this month, and people say nothing will deter them or stop them from going on.
So, I mean, picking up on a few things from that report that we just saw, I mean, Is it really as bad? I mean, a lot of people are genuinely dependent on outside aid just to get an iftar meal.
Well, you see, Palestinians, they refuse the idea of relying on international agencies such as UNRWA or any other charities to get food parcels or to break their fast by being invited by this organization or that. But they have no alternative.
Yeah.
You know, many people lost their houses, they break their fast in the middle of the rubble of their destroyed homes or houses. So, generally speaking, they refuse this reality. It is Israel who should be blamed in the first place for continuing the siege for the eighth consecutive year, the closure of border crossings, inaction of the international community for not doing enough to pressure Israel or neighboring Egypt to open the crossing or facilitate life. Reconstruction has not started yet. So sense of despair, frustration is very high amongst people.
But they still try and keep the morale high, you know, despite everything around them. They're not despairing.
Yeah, yes, indeed. As I said, the cycle of life is ongoing, and they try to have a normal life. They send a message to the world that, you know, they are resilient people. They will not, you know, give up or raise the white flag. They have accustomed to this kind of suffering. Three wars in less than 6 years.
Yeah.
Young generation in Gaza, more than 55% of the population are young people, and children have been badly affected psychologically and they suffer from trauma. Yeah. So they try to, you know, gather children, their families, their relatives around the table just to have a normal life.
I guess conditions for Palestinians in the West Bank and even the 1948 areas, it's a little bit easier for them to perform their Ramadan duties than it is for Gazans, right?
You could say that. The economy is much better, despite the fact they have more than 600 roadblocks and checkpoints.
Yeah.
The Israeli authorities, they announced that they will give some permissions for families from the West Bank to visit the Al-Aqsa Mosque or from Gaza even.
But it's very restricted, isn't it?
Very restricted. A small number of people are allowed to go there. I mean, there is kind of comparison. People in Gaza have been living in despair, poverty, under siege, isolated. People in the West Bank, although it's bigger in terms of geography, but there are roadblocks, their movement is restricted. Yeah. This is the Israeli trick. They wanted to create this division, separation, comparison. People in Gaza, if you decided to continue supporting the resistance, this is going to be your fate under poverty, under siege, under war. Whereas people in the West Bank who live under the Western backed government, Palestinian Authority led by Mahmoud Abbas, you will have a nice life.
Okay, all right, we're going to continue this conversation in a few minutes, but we're going to move on for the time being. Now, as I alluded to earlier, the Israeli army stopped a humanitarian aid boat from reaching Gaza last week. Activists said the Israeli Navy violently took over the Marianne and tasered a Swedish activist. This differed from the Israeli military's version of events. They said that there had been no violence used by either the protesters or the soldiers. Now, we've been casting our eye on that and some of the other latest events in Palestine, so here's Camelia Shambayati with more.
Social media has proven once again to be one of the most effective ways to expose Israeli crimes. There's been constant social media activity, especially over the Gaza Freedom Flotilla. Now, contrary to Israeli claims that the boat Marianne was taken peacefully, shocking footage has surfaced showing armed Israeli officers using brutal violence against unarmed passengers aboard the Gaza-bound boat. First, you see Basil Gattas, who is an Arab member of the Israeli Knesset, addressing the Israeli Navy, trying to offer a peaceful agreement to speak to their captain. But the offer appears to have been rejected, as the video then shows the Israelis announcing their intention to forcibly seize the boat. It then cuts to the Israelis, who are seen repeatedly tasering Swedish activist and humanitarian aid worker Charlie Andreasen. And people have expressed their outrage over this video. John from the UK said, "Why is the media and the world leaders remaining silent?" And Mark from the US makes a gloomy remark, saying, "They were lucky they weren't murdered like the other people on the first flotilla." Moving on now, the International Solidarity Movement, who regularly upload videos on YouTube, have now released one showing Israeli settlers attacking a Palestinian home and market in Hebron. Filmed on a mobile, the video shows the Hamas settlers hurling rocks and blasting water into Palestinian homes. And if that wasn't scary enough, a settler with an assault rifle arrives to the scene just before the video ends. Okay, I'm afraid that's all the social media news I have for you this time. Please do pay a visit to our social media accounts on Facebook and Twitter to engage with the show.
Richard, if I can come to you, tell me about your experience on the recent Freedom Flotilla.
It was an interesting experience, and I've had time to digest some of the kind of mainstream media and the comments you see on the Twitter sphere. It was interesting to me that a lot of the characterization of the mission was dubbed as terrorists, you know, taking aid to terrorists in Gaza. This couldn't be further from the truth. You had currently serving parliamentarians, former parliamentarians, you had the ex-president of Tunisia, ex-members of the Navy and US Army, journalists, humanitarian workers who do that full-time. So you had an array of people from an array of different backgrounds. And from what I see, a lot of the coverage was disingenuous. And in a lot of instances, I didn't see the flotilla covered at all, actually, in the mainstream media.
Well, I mean, get to that, but you yourself, you didn't actually get on the boat to Gaza. You were left behind in Greece. Was that why was that the case?
Unfortunately, from what I understand, it was a combination of at various points there were problems with the boat, although the crew and the boat were ready eventually on time. It was also that and a combination of local pressure applied by local authorities. Right. And I think to one extent or another.
The Greek authorities didn't want you going.
Yes, and that was
some
the case.
Agreement with Israel, perhaps? Or
perhaps, yeah. I mean, I don't know for definite, but that perhaps was the case, and it definitely was the case a few years ago when one of the boats was due to set sail from Greece. We know that Mossad had a presence where we were in Crete, which I can say now. Our car was chased and followed by three different cars at different junctures. So there was a heavy presence there, so it wouldn't surprise me if the pressure that we faced from the local authorities was directly from Israel itself.
So nevertheless, a boat did go, and it contained some prominent personalities, as you just said. It was intercepted by the Israelis. They say it was a peaceful operation.
This is complete lies. It was anything but peaceful. It's never peaceful when the Israeli authorities board humanitarian missions. Everyone, I'm sure, remembers the incident of the Mavi Marmara a few years back, where 9 activists were killed. A further person later died from the injuries inflicted. It's a fallacy to say it was a peaceful and uneventful, I believe, that the official response was from the Israeli authorities. One of the activists, Charlie Andreasen, was tasered.
Yeah.
The footage is it's on social media.
Is he okay now?
I haven't spoken to him directly. I understand that he's okay, although, to be really clear, it's an act of terrorism for someone to be tasered in international waters on an international humanitarian mission.
Yeah, so that's fundamental, isn't it? They were stopped in international waters, not in Israeli waters or
absolutely
anything like that.
So I take issue with the fact that people then say the people that were taken to Ashdod were then deported, because these people were taken to Israel and their destination was Gaza. So what happened on the high seas in international waters was an act of piracy. It was an international water, the Marianne. It was a group of international activists that were on board taking aid to Gaza, which needs the aid, and the reason for that is because Israel doesn't even fulfill its basic obligations under UN law as an occupying force in the Palestinian land.
I read that Netanyahu said that you lot were a bunch of Hamas sympathisers.
I think the response to that is Hamas are the government in Palestine. I'm not Palestinian. I'm not really interested in who they elect. I thought another interesting comment by Netanyahu's regime was the fact that, you know, he kind of said, I think you got lost, you were on your way to Syria. And this, to me, is absolutely, it's a despicable use of exploiting the tragedy of one humanitarian crisis to divert attention from another humanitarian crisis in Gaza. You know, we're kind of used, I think, to hearing the Israelis exploit the tragedy of one tragedy to justify another.
So, Richard, what do you feel you achieved with I mean, it didn't get into Gaza, it didn't break the siege. What do you feel you've achieved?
I feel, and I hope, we've raised the issue of what's happening in Gaza at least to an international level in terms of the coverage we've managed to galvanise. While, of course, we were aiming to reach Gaza, we were under no illusions that the world's most sophisticated armed forces, or one of them, it was always highly likely, and we were given training, it was always highly likely that we were going to be intercepted by the IDF. The reality is these are a group of boats which are put together with sparse funding, and so it was, these are fishing boats, and it was always the case of, you know, the Israelis were likely to intercept them. Yeah, but I hope we've raised the, and this is what this is about, I hope we've highlighted to perhaps some new eyes and new ears what's happening.
Well, I mean, I think you have, and I did see a lot of coverage of it, but as you say before, perhaps not enough. And the focus doesn't seem to be on Palestine like it used to be. I mean, maybe because of Syria and other things like that.
Sure. I mean, I think there's not enough coverage of what's happening in Gaza. And I think until Gaza is free and it's not besieged by land, sea and air, I think that we need to continue doing the work we're doing. And that's to say the BDS movement, the flotilla, every organisation really, which is geared around raising the plight of what's happening to the people in Gaza. It can't really stop until... and one point I'd like to make really quickly... Sure, is that Netanyahu said there's no humanitarian crisis in Gaza. I'd invite him to go to the refugee camps in Gaza. I really don't believe that's the case at all. We know there's a humanitarian crisis in Gaza.
All right, guys, so we're going to conclude this conversation in a few minutes, but we're going to move on again for the time being. Mads Gilbert is a Norwegian physician who's become famous for documenting Palestinian suffering at the hands of the Israelis, especially during the 2014 war on Gaza. He's written a book about his experiences, and Camelia Shambayati went along to the book launch.
At this sold-out event, the Norwegian doctor and activist Mads Gilbert has come to London to speak about his new book called Night in Gaza, which details his experiences working in the Al-Shifa Hospital during the Israeli war on Gaza last summer.
The internationally renowned trauma surgeon and activist is one of the few foreign doctors to have seen up close the tragic consequences of several Israeli aggressions on Palestinians. He has provided medical care for Palestinians in Gaza for 15 years. Almost 2,140 Palestinians were killed in 50 days of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. His graphic book, Night in Gaza, powerfully encapsulates the horrors of last summer's war.
This is a book with the inside story about Shifa Hospital and the heroes of Gaza. The nurses, the doctors, the paramedics, the civilians, the volunteers who really survived and did their best to have others survive the last Israeli attack. So I think we need to understand that we have a responsibility. There is no neutral position. And this is not a difficult conflict. This is a difficult occupation, and we need to make an end to that occupation.
The Israeli regime has now banned Dr. Gilbert from ever returning to Gaza for so-called security reasons.
I'm banned by the Israeli authorities to enter Gaza, yes. From last October, I was denied entry, despite the fact that I had a valid multiple entry IDF travel permit, and they are saying they have some security issues with me, which I don't know what are. The Norwegian government has protested against this travel ban, and of course it is absolutely unacceptable that medical doctors and humanitarian relief workers are denied access to a population who really needs solidarity and practical medical support.
Despite this, Dr. Gilbert is defiant in responding to the ban and is determined to make a return to Gaza in the near future.
So that was Mads Gilbert. Yusuf, if I can come to you, getting back to the freedom flotillas. I mean, how do people in Gaza, how do they view the freedom flotillas?
Well, the boats did not arrive Gaza, into Gaza, but their message has dead. The message reached the people of Gaza. We kind of anticipated that the flotilla or the kind of boats would be intercepted by the Israeli Navy commandos, but at least these activists, they showed courage by putting themselves in risk and, you know,
so it's well appreciated
breaking the waves. Yeah, of course, people were you know, eagerly waiting the arrival of these activists, and many activities took place, were organized at the Gaza seaport to welcome the activists, to boost their morale.
But it's 9 years, or nearly 9 years, that that siege has been in place. It must be incredibly frustrating for you guys.
I think this is the thing. Israel is trying to break the will, to break the morale of the Palestinians, saying that you are alone, no one will support you, these activists kind of doing kind of media show, and you have to rely on yourselves, you have to you have to show that you are a good people by, you know, relinquishing your rights, by, you know, going to the streets to oppose this faction or that faction. I remember, I will never forget the moment of jubilation when the first two siege breaking boats docked at Gaza Seaport in August 2008. I was reporting live for Press TV.
Yeah.
So thousands, a sea of people, tsunami of people were waiting at the seaport and they greeted the activists. So, by the way, Gaza Seaport is the only port that has been closed for shipping since 1967.
But Yusuf, before I go back to Richard, I just want to ask you one more question about, are there some signs of hope? Because obviously the siege is imposed by Egypt as well. And recently, Egypt have taken Hamas off the terrorist list. Rafah was open for a week earlier this month. There is talk about the seaport being opened. Are there some signs of hope here?
You see, people of Gaza have lost hope.
Yeah.
But somehow, from my observations, I could sense that there is going to be a change in the near future because the siege and the three wars in Gaza failed to achieve Israel's goal, which is to break the will of the Palestinians, to crush the resistance, to you know, to restore what they call the power of deterrence. So I think they have had enough, or maybe they are tired. They say, you know, we are useless. So they might agree to kind of agreement to some officials say that they will allow even floating airport off the seashore of Gaza or electricity plant.
There might be some compromises. Yeah.
Because, you know, they are, Gaza is a burden on their shoulders and they have been trying for the past 9 years to push Gaza towards Egypt. And Egypt is closing the border, saying this is not our problem. So Gaza is still an occupied territory.
So Egypt still, Egypt wants Gaza to remain Israel's problem. Is that their policy?
Of course. And by the way, when they intercepted the flotilla, this is an evidence that Israel still maintains Gaza's full control of, you know, the, under the occupation, the airspace and land and seaport.
Richard, I just want to conclude the show with you. Kind of the same question to you. I mean, how are we going to break this siege? What for pro-Palestinian activists? What is our strategy to actually get this thing done?
That's a good question, and it reminds me of, I put the question to Charlie, who was the guy who was tasered in the footage, and he said something to me that kind of stuck in my mind, and he said that the fight for Palestinian rights is as much a fight outside of Palestine as it is within Palestine. I mean, maybe Yusuf agrees or disagrees, but I feel that when the minds of ordinary people who have the power to reach the elected representatives that keep this going, the governments that uphold this, the British government, European governments, I think, really it's a battle of information.
Have they got the message? I mean, is it going to take more flotillas? Are there going to be any more flotillas? Or do you think they're actually listening?
I think it will take more flotillas. There will be more flotillas. But I think it's, if you'll pardon the pun, all hands on deck. It's really a war of information. Because when you talk to ordinary, and I believe well-meaning people, especially in this country, so many people have so many myths about Palestine and the people of Gaza in their mind. Everyone in Gaza is a terrorist, Hamas are terrorists. And there are simple myths that I feel can be broken by just highlighting international law and what credible human rights organizations acknowledge is happening in Gaza. You know, the fact that an elected representative like Netanyahu can confidently say to the world, there is no humanitarian crisis in Gaza, really gives us a kind of an idea of just how deep this is entrenched in people's minds.
All right, well, thank you, both of you guys, for talking about Ramadan and talking about the Freedom Flotilla. Wonderful to have you on. Okay, that's all we've got time for today. Once more, thank you to all our guests. And don't forget to get busy, please, on social media, telling us what you think of the issues raised in this program. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next time for more discussion and analysis on Palestine. Bye-bye.